Hi. I actually have a thumb drive in my purse right now with my paper on it and a PowerPoint and everything. But I decided to kind of do away with that because I don't like talking at people. I don't like standing up here and reading a paper. I want to, you know, have a conversation with you, let you know what I experienced from my Belize trip with Dr. Dina, and, you know, you can ask questions from there. So the context, there is a book in this, I promise. But this past summer, I went to Belize, headed by Dr. Dina, and we were only there for, 2 weeks and 1 day, but we traveled all around the country. Like, it was beautiful, and you got to experience the culture, the amazing people. The people are so nice. Like, in Belize, I was amazed. So as we were traveling around the country, of course, for a couple of the cities, we had kind of informal tour guides driving us around and telling us random facts about the city that we were in. And as we went on, I noticed this trend. Like, when we were in Belize City, I believe it was, he pointed out to a bridge, said that was donated by Canada. Pointed out another bridge that was donated by Taiwan. We passed a monument. Oh, that is dedicated to the American who put in millions of dollars to this country. And I was like, okay, what's Belizean? Besides the food stands and, of course, the people, what really makes up Belize? And as I continued to find out, like, all of these facts about the different countries donating things and, you know, putting in projects, like, there's a solar panel, I think it is, at the University of Belize at Belmopan from Japan. And we started to question this, not really imitation, but a adoption, kind of other countries. Randy, he was with us as well. What's it? Marfield. Randy Marfield, he's a PhD student here as well. And he was actually there with us. He's from Belize. He's one of the few Belizean students that we have. And he started to tell us how that extended into the politics of Belize. Says we are adopting these foreign politics, these foreign policies, and they're surprised that it's not really working out. So what is Belize? Like, what makes us us? Or them, them, because I'm not Belizean. But, so that is the context that I read Wilson Harris's Palace of the Peacock. The novel basically describes the journey Don, our main character, goes through the forest of Guyana, which is homeland of Dina here, as well as Wilson Harris. And the crew, Don brings his crew, which is made up of Guyanese, to pursue a group of farmers in order for him to force them to work his land, basically. So we have a crew of Guyanese pursuing rather viciously another group of Guyanese, kind of acting as the oppressor. So they've basically taken over the spot of the British. Instead of the white man being the oppressor, they've become the oppressor in this novel. So the immediate thing that I saw with this book, because I read it kind of towards the beginning, and immediately a connection to Conrad's Heart of Darkness. It's like, this is exactly like Conrad's book. Why is that? And so I started researching, and I got a few hits. And as I continued to research, that's basically all I found. Wilson Harris's novel is an imitation of Conrad's Heart of Darkness. His novel is an imitation of West African deities. His novel is an imitation of Wordsworth's poems. And all I saw throughout these articles is imitation, imitation, imitation. And I was like, okay, I'm missing something here. What's behind all of this? Why is this novel important for his country, basically? And what I've really come up with is that it's a post-colonial rewrite. So in Conrad's novel, there's the group of white men in Africa pursuing Africans, for the most part. And Harris's novel is a group of the indigenous pursuing the indigenous. So he is stepping forward to tell the story of Guyana, the post-colonial rewrite. He's telling his own story. He's not letting the British oppressors tell his story for him. And that was, I believe, the basis of writing the novel in the first place, to establish their own being, basically. And connecting this back to Belize, I think that in order to create or solidify this national identity, the post-colonial rewrite is imperative. Like, you have to tell your story. You can't have your history told by an outsider. So when we see, oh, goodness, there's Jane Eyre, and then
Y.T. Gatsosi.
I read that as well for this trip. And that's another post-colonial rewrite. And it's basically saying we have voices too. We can tell our story. We don't need you to create our history. Because with the oppressor creating the history for the indigenous, that gives them more power. So I believe Wilson Harris is bringing the power back to the Guyanese. Even though what happens in the novel initially is rather negative, like you're oppressing your own people, stop. I think that it is the first step towards creating a national identity. And without this post-colonial rewrite, then you're kind of grabbing at nothing. You're trying to create an identity without having the background of that identity. So that's just, that was my workings as I was writing this paper. And that's basically all I came up with. What do you guys think?
Question, comments?
Yes.
Did you ever kind of in your paper or in your research discover what was Belizeans about Belize?
I, of course, we read some novels. Actually from Belizean writers. Becca Lamb. Sorry, my head is all over the place right now. But I feel that they are beginning to create these, like, not only text, literature, but art and music. Like, that's other forms of literature, and it's trying to solidify an identity there. But if the people don't really recognize that, then it won't do its purpose, if that makes sense. Or at least that's what I think.
Just to put lots of sense.
Please
do.
The country is nascent in terms of just finding its independence since 1981.
Yeah.
It's like 30 or so years.
Mm-hmm.
The creation of an identity, I think, it goes beyond that. And we live in a world that is heavily impacted by the foreign influence of powerful countries, U.S. for one,
mm-hmm.
and there are others out there. So I tend to fall along with the same idea that you're saying, that the creation of that identity is increasingly difficult in these times, right? It exists, though, it does exist, but again, it's something that people have to recognize,
mm-hmm.
and people have to continue to foster its growth, because the world seems to be, turning into this bland state of uniformity. Everything seems to be alike. And that, in a sense, kind of erodes culture, I think, the uniqueness of culture.
Mm-hmm.
So.